Hello, and welcome to the Sunday service of Calvary Chapel Foothill Ranch with Pastor Steve DiNicola.
Let's turn in our books to the, or turn in our Bibles to the book of Naomi. Ruth, we got the, okay, perfect. We're in the right book. I know some people are looking in their table of contents right now saying, wait a minute, my Bible doesn't have that. So this is the book of Ruth, but you'll see kind of why I say that. Because while the book of Ruth tends to be taught in a way that focuses on Ruth and Boaz, you know, and how great their character is, and it is about that, but the reality is that this book is really about Naomi. And this book should be really titled Naomi, in my opinion, but God is sovereign and he wins. So I lose that fight. So the title of today's message is God Works Through the Darkness. Okay, God works through the darkness. So if all of you can turn to Ruth, we're going to be kind of jumping around in Ruth, and we're going to do a little bit of a Cliff Note version. I'm going to cover the main theme of this book. But Ruth chapter 1, verses 1 to 2. So Ruth 1:1-2, it says, "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephratites from Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to the country of Moab and remained there." And just a quick reminder before we do that, I forgot to dismiss youth. It looks like youth already worked their way out of here. So, perfect. So, right in the beginning of Ruth, it's the whole context behind this book is the period of the judges. So, it starts right off by saying, "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled." So, it's important for us to understand the context of this. During this period, this was one of the worst extreme spiritual and moral decays in Israel. Okay, so during this time, this was not a very faithful following God time period in Israel's past. And if you read it, it can get frustrating when you go through Judges and you hear how, you know, the people are disobedient and they fall away from God, and then they end up normally getting oppressed by some other country around. God comes in, brings a superhero called a judge. He frees his people, and then they come back to God for about, maybe let's say, 5 minutes. Not long enough, right? As soon as you read the next verse, we already see that they have chosen to walk away from God yet again. And that just cycle keeps repeating and repeating and repeating during these days. So this was just a time where Israel was repeatedly being disobedient, and God was constantly good to them and saving them. So during this time, this is when this is set. So this is right after the book of Judges. It's set during this time, this book. So it starts off by saying that right up front, there was a time of severe famine in the land. Okay. So at this time that this is faced, or that this is placed, we have Israel being disobedient to God, and we have a famine, which most likely was caused because of the disobedience. So this was one way that God kind of got his people back to where they needed to get to, was through famines and other means, other countries. So we don't know what Naomi's opinion was in this. It says Elimelech gets his family together, takes his wife, his two sons, and they go to the land of Moab. We don't know if she was in agreement with this. We don't know if she didn't like this decision. We just don't know. And during this time period, it really wouldn't matter because the husband would lead the family in wherever they were to go, and the wife didn't have a whole lot of say in it. So we don't know. The Bible doesn't say if she was behind it, if she was, you know, opposed to it. But I think if she was opposed to it, it would probably make mention of that. So Elimelech takes his family and they go into Moab. So why did they go? It was for food, right? There was a famine, they're hungry, so they go to Moab for food. It's not that simple. And when we look at this book, we see the heart of Elimelech and probably his family in going to Moab and leaving the land that God had promised for them. So they go in the name of we're hungry. And that's kind of their excuse that they say to themselves, like, we're going to leave God's country and we're going to go to the enemy's country. We're going to do that because we're hungry. And that's probably how they convinced themselves that this wasn't a big deal. But what does this show? This shows a tremendous lack of faith that God could provide through the famine. Think about that. In order for you to leave God's land that he promised to them and all the promises that God gave them, Elimelech took his family out of where God wanted him and he took them into the land of the enemy for help. Which shows that in his heart, he is more trusting of his enemy than he is of God's provision in order to come through. Another thing that this shows is that it was easier for them to just leave Israel than to stay there and really get back on track and get back in worship and communion with God. So, and I think we've seen this, where sometimes it's just easier for us to just say, you know what, rather than fix my heart, rather than fix, you know, and get back on track and work on my relationship, I'll just take myself somewhere else and, you know, it should be better for me. And that's kind of what Elimelech is doing here. But I want to highlight the point that he left God and he left God's country with all the promises. God has so many promises for Israel, it's crazy. He leaves that and goes to the enemy for help. This isn't going to turn out that well for him. We'll see how that all plays out. But his heart in this and the heart of the family to just leave God's promises and just go wherever they thought was going to work better for a minute, it shows the state of their heart. So the big question here is, was it a sin for them to leave Israel, to leave Judah, and to go to the land of Moab? Was it a sin? I think it was. And here's kind of the reasons why I think it was. One, Moab was a Gentile city. They had absolutely no place being there. There was nothing for them there that was going to be good. Okay, and we have to remember during this time period, the Jews were supposed to really keep themselves separate from the Gentile nations. I mean, there were things, all sorts. If you touched a Gentile with your clothes, you were impure and you had to go through this process to be purified again. So to leave and to go into their country was pretty significant. This is the same thing that we saw when Samson, when I taught on Samson maybe 6 months ago. When I taught on Samson, we looked at how he went down. It says, and Samson went down to Timnah. And that wasn't speaking geographically. Geographically, Timnah was higher in elevation. But it's talking about spiritually. He's leaving where God has him called to be and going to the land of the enemy. So, something else that we got to take into context here is the fact that Moab was long, they had a long history with Israel. This wasn't just, some country that they went to that, you know, they really didn't have any disagreements or anything like that. It was just Gentile. This was the worst. This was the worst place that they could go within proximity. They have a long history. A little bit of that history, I'll give you a couple facts here. One, the Moabites, so the people of Moab, are descendants from Lot and the incestuous relationship that he had with his oldest daughter. So Lot, the guy who was outside Sodom and Gomorrah, kind of too close, you know, getting affected by them, and God says, get the heck out of there, I'm going to destroy them. His wife turns around, we all know she turns into a pillar of salt. That's this guy. He was constantly being seen kind of just a little too close for comfort to sin into those countries. And so the Moabites, this people group, this race, they were formed from Lot having sexual relations with his oldest daughter. That's how these people came on the earth. This is really bad. Like, that's not a good way to start a race and a people group, is to have relationships with your daughter. So that's where they started from. Then we see different times, and that was in Genesis 19, by the way. Then we see the Moabite women leading the men of Israel into sin during the Exodus in Numbers 25, and even King Solomon himself into sin in 1 Kings chapter 11. So this was the worst place that they could have gone. I mean, you're talking the number one enemy that they had right there was Moab. And so we got to take that into account. This wasn't just going to, you know, going to a supermarket in the town next door. This was an explicit act of going into the enemy and leaving God and leaving God's promises and his country and where they should have been. And to make things worse, they got pretty well engrossed in this culture. It wasn't like they just went and they got, you know, they got dinner and then they came back. They're there for 10 years. It says we know it's at least 10 years. And it's enough for each one of her sons, of Naomi's sons, to marry Moabite women. So talk about getting into the culture. I mean, they're just full-fledged into the Moabite culture at this point. So let's move forward to Ruth 1, 3 to 5, the next couple verses. It says, "Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. Now they took wives of women of Moab. The name of one was Orpha, the name of the other Ruth, and they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So the woman survived her two sons and her husband." Think about that. I am sure that at this moment, Naomi felt like she was being punished by God for going to Moab. We don't know, like I said, we don't know if she was on board with the decision. We don't know if she was in opposition to the decision of her husband. But we know now her husband and her two sons have died. And all she's left with is herself and her two daughters-in-law. Imagine how heartbroken Naomi is at this moment. So I want to make sure that as we go into the rest of this message, we have to realize that she is completely heartbroken. Naomi was in pitch black darkness. You really can't go any lower. She lost her family. She's in the land of her enemy. And she lost her inheritance, her future, her provision. She lost everything. And I'm sure she's sitting there saying, "Man, what did we do?" Ruth 1:6, the next verse, it says, "For she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread." Of course God provided. These are the promises that God gave, that he was going to care for his people. And we see God's constant, repeated, just saving his people and then turning their back on him, and then he saves them again, and then they turn their back on him. And we see this pattern all the time. How did Elimelech not know that the safest spot for him was right there in Judah, where God was and where the promises of God were? So now Naomi's in the land of her enemy. She lost everything, and she hears, "Oh, God came and blessed the people back home." So this got to be really hard. If she wasn't already feeling all these mixed emotions and resentment and bitterness and everything, she sure is now to find out that, "Oh, God, of course, blessed everyone back home. We should have just stayed there." In this, Ruth is loyal to Naomi. Okay, so Naomi decides she's going to get up, she's going to leave Moab, she's going to go back home. And Ruth says, "I'll go with you." And we got to realize what that means during this time period. In order for you to leave your country just the same way that Naomi did when she went to Moab, Ruth is giving up everything along, just as Naomi lost everything. She was young, she was pretty, she could have remarried, she could have, you know, her life could just completely start over. Naomi is the one that's old and, you know, is looking at it like, "Man, I got no hope here." But Ruth had, she could have just started over. This could have been a brand new start for her. But she decides to go with Naomi and say, "Wherever you go, I will go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God." And so Ruth sacrifices her future for Naomi. And like I said, Ruth was young enough to start over. That's a big sacrifice to just say, "You know what? I'm going to go and I'm going to suffer the same things that you suffer. And I'm going to be with you, Naomi, through this whole thing." And then we look at Naomi's heart now. Okay, so we see the heartache that she had. We see the position, the circumstances that she's in. We see that she's in darkness. Now we're going to look at her heart. And there's some major bitterness in her heart. And so if you can look at chapter 1, verse 13, this is Naomi speaking. She says, "My life is much too bitter for you to share against the Lord's, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." And this is Naomi speaking to Ruth. And I like the NLT because it says, "The Lord has raised his fist against me." And then verse 20, it says, this is Naomi speaking again, "I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has pronounced judgment on me and the Almighty has afflicted me?" This is her heart. She's very vocal, and this is how I feel, that God himself has come against me. God has raised his fist against me. And Naomi even says, "I went away full." I read that, and I'm like, what? Didn't you leave because you were hungry? Like, if we just think about that statement, "I went away full," but she was hungry, and then "God has afflicted me." Oh, how quickly we can forget and twist things in our mind. This was 10 years before that Elimelech made a decision to uproot his family, take them to Moab. They've suffered all these consequences of those actions, of that decision. And now Naomi's saying, "Man, God is against me. I went away full, now I'm empty." And we need to be careful of that, guys. I can do this in my own life where I forget all the little steps that I took to walk away from God. And then it's easy for me to wake up one day and be like, "God, where are you? Where is your spirit? I don't feel you. Why don't I get the chills like I used to get the chills? Why don't you just bless me like I used to be blessed?" And we can turn it. We can take it and we can forget that we made all these decisions that led us off of God's path and led us just into darkness. And then we can turn it around, and in our heart we can now be bitter and blame God for it. How would you feel too when you're Ruth in this? Right? So Naomi comes home and she tells everybody, "I lost everything. Don't even call me Naomi anymore because I'm too bitter. There's too much bitterness." And Ruth is like, "What? I just left everything for you." She sacrificed her whole future, her whole life to be with her. And here's Naomi is saying, "I lost everything. I got nothing." But it shows the character of Ruth, because we don't see that she says, "What? I'm with you. I don't count." We don't see anything like that. But I can imagine if I was in Ruth's spot, I'd be a little hurt by that comment. "I know you lost a lot, but I'm with you. I got your back." So it just shows that Ruth is a very good woman. Just a good woman. So when we look at Bible passages, it's always so important to understand the context, right? Especially Old Testament. We need to understand, what did this mean for Ruth and Naomi to be, for Naomi to be a widow with no sons? Because if we don't understand that, then we don't understand the severity of the situation. So what does it mean? It means social and economic tragedy. This isn't just a little bit. It's not like, "Oh, you know, that really, you know, that really stinks. You're going to need to go to therapy. And one day, you know, you can remarry and blah, blah, blah." It's not like it is today. This was social and economic tragedy. A woman could not provide for herself. A woman couldn't just go out and get, you know, a couple part-time jobs and just work and put money on the table, food on the table. It wasn't like that. The husband needed to do that. So when the husband died, a woman was really left in a very, very tough situation. And socially, the husband led the social part of life as well. So if the husband's no longer part of it, the wife can no longer be a part of the social parts of life and culture. So now Naomi is on the outside. So now not only has she lost everything, and her whole family has died here, but she can't provide for herself. She's now being cut out of most of what she's known. She's grown up as a part of society, and now she's going to be removed from that. And it also meant that the family name would come to an end. And we don't think about that in today's culture as being that significant, but during this culture, that was everything. God had rules and regulations, and you'll see them all throughout the Old Testament, about how the family was supposed to continue on. And God set up all these things in order for the family to be together, successful, to provide for each other. And so the way God set it up is that each family had their own land, and that would be passed down generation to generation to generation. So, I mean, as far back as you could trace, your family was on this piece of land. And so if there were no sons to take over the piece of land, you lost it. So not only does she lose out, but now any hope at the future of that land being in that family is now just dead too. She lost her husband, her two sons, the future, the land, the inheritance, everything just gone. It's crazy. And I mentioned it, but she would be unable to provide for herself. Which means, what are the options available to a woman in Naomi's situation? She's either begging for food, so she's out on the streets begging for food, and that's how she can survive. She can glean fields, which gleaning fields is kind of God's first form of welfare. And what it was when you owned land and you were a farmer, when your crop was ready to be picked, you could only pick it once. So you're not allowed to go back a second time and pick all the fruit that is that is ripened now. You could go through one time, and then the poor, the widows, the orphans, they could go through the field after you've done your one pick, and they can take what's remaining. So God really set this up so that he's providing for everybody. The wealthy don't get too wealthy, but they have plenty. And then those who are in need have a means through that to be able to provide for themselves and at least get by. And it was very common for these women to be exploited. We see it today. As soon as somebody's vulnerable, all the sharks come in and just attack. How can I get the land? How can I get the inheritance? How can I get those the vines for the grapes? How can I get the wheat fields? He grows the best wheat. I'm going to take that. And then they come in, and without a husband being able to negotiate and stand up for this, it's very, very, very vulnerable. This was not a good place for Naomi to be. And now Ruth, by choice, has joined her in this. And so what does that mean? Most of these women would end up becoming a slave or servant of some kind. So she knew, at this point, really the best thing for me is to become a slave or a servant. Imagine how hopeless Naomi feels right now. Imagine how hopeless her future appears to be. Think about that. Put yourself in her position right now. Wear her shoes for a second. She's in the land of she lost everything in the land of the enemy. She has no way to provide for herself. Her inheritance, her land, everything that she's grown up with and been in the family forever, that's all come to an end. At best case, she's probably looking at trying to be a slave somewhere. Imagine how hopeless this appears to be. She probably feels forgotten and forsaken by God. Her plans for her life were completely crushed and literally died right before her. And she probably thought, God, how could this possibly be a part of your plan for me? I'm sure she asked God this question a lot. Lord, how can this possibly be a part of your plan for me? Have you ever asked God the same question, wondered the same question? God, how in the world? How? Why? But the great part is that God had an eternal plan for her and her family. So Naomi feels at the bottom of the bottom with no hope. She's hopeless. But God had an eternal plan for her and her family. So we're going to go through kind of the Cliff Notes version of Ruth. We're going to go through this pretty quickly. But Naomi moves back to Judah, and Ruth goes with her. We just looked at that. Then Ruth goes out to glean the fields. That was what I was saying, where that she can go out and she can pick behind the harvesters and she can get what is left, which is not much and it's not the best. But she can go behind them and pick that. So Ruth 2:3, if you can turn to Ruth 2, verse 3. Ruth 2:3 says, then she left and went, and this is talking about Ruth, okay? Then she left and went and gleaned in the fields after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. So when it says she happened, we would say coincidentally. That's how we would phrase that today. So coincidentally, she ends up in the field of the man who can redeem her and be literally that savior for her. Coincidence? I think not. There are no coincidences. There's no coincidences. To Ruth, it's just, okay, I'm just going to a field that I can glean. And she has no idea that God brought her right there, and she's in the one field of the one man that can actually offer her and Naomi a hope and a future. That's important to realize that God doesn't always work in like a hocus-pocus way. It's not like something where I'm like, God, show me your path. Like, open up the heavens and have, you know, fire and brimstone. Maybe not fire and brimstone. I don't want that. But maybe, you know, like thunder come down in your voice to tell me, like, this is my plan for you. God doesn't work like that very often. He can. So it's an option to him. But the reality is, most of the time, God just works when we put in the effort. God guides us. As long as we have our eyes fixed on him and we're seeking him and where to go. Ruth had to put in work here. She wasn't sitting at home on the couch and Boaz walked by and was like, hey, I can redeem you. No, she went and put in the work and was in the field. She wasn't even pursuing this. She didn't know the guy who owned the field. She had no idea. This is the land of her enemy. So she doesn't know anything about this. But God has his hand in that. But Ruth had to put in the work. God blessed it. So then we go on. Boaz tells Ruth that she should stay in his fields and pick with his harvesters. So now it's gone from the gleaning, which is the leftover stuff that's not so great. This is, you can pick with my harvesters. You can pick the best. And he even goes as far as to tell the harvesters, just kind of drop some heads of grain as you go. You know, so he's even going like to that extent with this. And if you can turn to Ruth 3, we're going to read Ruth 3, 1 to 4. It says, then Naomi said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that I may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself. Put on your best garment and go down to the threshing floor. Do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Then it shall be, when he lies down, that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do. This is questionable to me. When I read this, I'm like, oh, that sounds weird. You know, I mean, now we got to realize Boaz is old. He's an old guy. He sees Ruth in the field and is like, hey, who's that hot chick? I mean, that was Boaz's response when he saw Ruth. Ruth is young, pretty, attractive, loyal, everything. And Boaz is the old guy. And so Naomi comes up with this plan and says, Ruth, get all dolled up and then sneak in there and pull the blanket, you know, and then sleep at his feet. And to me, it's kind of like, okay, what were you expecting was going to happen here, Naomi? This kind of seems like a little putting things in your own hands, you know? So when I first read it, it's kind of like, okay, this is questionable at best in my mind. What was Naomi expecting to have happen here? But the reality is the Bible doesn't spin it that way. And the Bible, God's word, is very clear at exposing the heart and the truth of something. God doesn't sugarcoat much of anything. And he doesn't sugarcoat anything in his Bible. So when we see this and it's not spun in a negative way, there must have been a pure heart in this. So God doesn't put a lot of focus on it. I'm not going to either. But it's just, it wasn't a problem in God's eyes. So both Boaz and Ruth, even through this, which to me, okay, you got the young hot girl now sleeping at the foot of the old guy, you know, who kind of had, hey, who's that girl? You know, you would expect, most people would fall at this point. But they both had character that they did not stumble and walk into sin. So they're both, it just shows their character that they didn't do anything outside of God's will here, outside of God's plan and calling. So, moving on, Boaz accepts the role of kinsman redeemer, which means Boaz is like a Christ type. He's a type of Christ that comes and paid the debt for another. He pays the debt for Ruth and Naomi to bring them redemption. And then if you look at chapter 4, verse 13, it says, so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. So God blesses this. Boaz steps in, redeems her, takes her as his wife, and then now they have a son. And if you look a couple verses later, or verse 14 to 17, it says, "Then the women said to Naomi, 'Praise the Lord who has not left you without a family redeemer today. May his name become well known in Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. Indeed, your daughter-in-law who loves you is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him.' Naomi took the child, placed him on her lap, and took care of him. The neighbor women said, 'A son has been born to Naomi,' and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse and the father of David." Do we realize at this point Naomi ends up raising this boy, this child? At this point, Ruth is not even mentioned here. Ruth is covered. Ruth has protection, covering, provision, everything through Boaz now. But we see Naomi, and even the women say, Naomi has been given a son. Naomi is the one that's truly redeemed here. Ruth as well. But Naomi, this is God's hand working in this. And did we catch at the end of that where it says, they named him Obed, he was the father of Jesse, the father of David? I'm not going to go through the whole lineage of Christ because there's just way too many names that I can't pronounce. But in Matthew chapter 1, it goes all the way through the lineage of Jesus himself. It starts with Abraham, and then it goes to Ruth, to Boaz, to Obed, and then it goes on in verse 16, "And Jacob begot Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called the Christ." Naomi ends up not only just getting by, not only just God provided enough food for her to not, you know, just perish on the streets, God redeemed her to the point where she is a very integral part in the lineage and line of Christ. Talk about how significant that is. This isn't just being partially redeemed or provided for. She is a part in the birth of Jesus himself and in that lineage. Would Naomi have ever thought that her future would be a part of the Savior's birth? Never in a million miles. When she was in the pitch black darkness in Moab, having lost her husband, her two sons, her inheritance, everything, she never could have imagined in her wildest dreams that she would be brought back into the land, restored, and that she would be a part of the line of Christ. So the point here is that God works all things together for those who love him. It was a painful path for Naomi to walk, but had a glorious conclusion. We got to realize that. It was a painful path, some of the decisions that she made and some of the paths she had to walk. But it was glorious in the end. God brought complete restoration beyond anything she ever could have dreamed. So the purpose of this book is to show how God works in our darkest times. If you haven't been there before, you'll be there. If you've been there before, you'll probably be there again in the dark where you just feel like, God, how could this possibly be a part of your plan for me? And it's easy for us to blame God, to grow bitter towards God, to just feel like we're forsaken and forgotten. But God has an eternal plan for all of his children. And the great part is that nothing is too daunting or too difficult for our God. Nothing. So we're going to go into communion here. We mix things up. We're putting communion at the end. I'm going to have David come up and share.
Hi, everyone. My name is David. I've been coming to church here for about 3 to 4 years now. And today's message from Weston is actually a very, something I can definitely relate to, you know. I grew up with God, or, you know, being taught that there is a God. And at a very young age, I began to question it. I began to disagree with some of the things that I was being taught. And as soon as church became an option for me, I started to just not go. I stopped coming. I started running away from God. And I very quickly, you know, as a young man and I'm sure a lot of young men and women can relate to this. You know, you try to find yourself and you try to kind of fit in and be accepted by this world. And I very quickly, you know, accepted the idea of being young, wild, and free, and, you know, really just accepted the lie that, you know, if there is a benevolent God, then why is the world the way it is? You know, so I justified a lot of my sin, a lot of the things that I was going, that I was doing. For me, I don't know. I even though I was doing all the things that I was doing and filling that void that I always felt, you know, it was a void that I always try to fill with relationships, with friends or people that I thought were my friends, and especially substances. You know, I was always just looking for something to make me feel whole, and I could never find it. And even though I was doing all the things I was doing, there was always something or someone that would help me out. Sometimes it was a kind word from a stranger. Sometimes it was actual people coming to and interceding for me and just pulling me out of whatever dark situation I was in. And you know, I always felt like a nudge. I always felt something inside of me tell me that there was something special, that I was meant for something better. And I didn't know what that was. At first, I was like, maybe it's a job. Maybe it's I need a career or whatever. And so it wasn't until recently that I started to look back that I realized that everything, that God has been with me the whole time. You know, God has always spoke to me through other people. You know, it's never been a thunderous voice from above, or at least not yet, but you know, it's always been through others. It's always been through the people that he's put in my way. They're always nudging me and pointing me towards him. And just like he was saying, Weston was saying earlier today, you know, I was there for a minute and walked away. Was there for a minute and walked away. And he never gave up. You know, the only constant in my life really has been my mom and my grandma. They were always praying for me, and I am so thankful for that. You know, in Proverbs 15:29, it says, the Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. And that couldn't be more true for me. There is definitely power in prayer. And I had to stumble a lot, you know. Through my falls, I came to a place where just the concept of having a personal relationship with God was finally presented to me. And it kind of just started to open up the doors for me to let him in. And that's when I started to come back. And again, I would come in and I would still keep a lot of myself to myself. Even though I came to church or I came to a Bible study, I would still kind of do my own thing outside. And things started to get better. But then it became pride for me. It was all about me. And when that happened, I fell again. And that was probably the hardest fall that I've had, and something that I really needed for me. Something that I knew Jesus, I knew God, just knew that it was all part of their plan, and I didn't know it at all. You know, I was living life in darkness, and I had no idea until I finally hit what for me was rock bottom, and I had so much shame, so much brokenness in my life at that point. I just asked and I begged for help. I begged him to take all of that out of me and to just help me live a good life, you know. And my mom, before this happened along the way, she had told me that Jesus had told her that I was going to come to Christ and that my friends would be taken or removed from me. Like, I would not have anything to do with them anymore. And when she said that those years ago, I was a little bit angry at her. I was like, how? No, you don't know me. You know, they're good. I'm living a good life right now. Everything's all right. I have some problems, but who doesn't? And, you know, fast forward a few years later and here I am, you know. When I went through that last just fall, and I was so broken, you know, I asked for help. Jesus was there, you know, like a good father, he was there. And I didn't realize it at the time, but he had done all this work before all that happened, that when I got up, or when I asked him for help to get up, none of my old friends were there anymore. But I had new ones. You know, I had a new family that was there waiting for me, that had been there, and I just didn't even know it. It was like I had been walking through darkness, and when I asked, he just turned on the light, and he's like, look around you, look what I've done. So I'm just super thankful to be here now, and I didn't do any of this myself. All of the things that are good in my life right now are all because of him. So praise God.
We hope God has spoken to you through this podcast. Tell your friends, and please visit us on the web at www.calvarychapelfoothillranch.com.